The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words. And those taking part are Anne Scott-James, Doris Powell, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norton. Round one tries to test how many words they know. Two marks if they get the meanings of these words right. Beginning with Anne Scott-James. Anne, what is a tuft hunter?
Well, it means somebody who chases important and famous people. Isn't it the same as Mrs. Leo Hunter? She was an example of a tuft hunter.
Absolutely right. Two marks. A toady, that's rather a word that's fallen out of the language. Person who makes a practice of seeking the company and society and behaves obsequiously towards titled and important people. And it comes from the fact that at one time at Oxford and Cambridge, noblemen's sons, titled undergraduates, wore a tuft or a gold tassel on their college caps to distinguish them from the commoners.
Or snobs.
Or snobs, yeah. If you like. Two marks. Frank Muir, what is a petroleur? P-E-T-R-O-L-E-U-R. Petroleur.
It's, oh, yes. It's the Irish for Gaelic wolfhound. No, it's French, isn't it? Petroleur. 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 Voleur is a thief.
Yeah.
Petroleur. Somebody who siphons from the petrol tank with a tube.
Okay, he might have done that. What's he do with the petrol when he's got it?
Spits it out. Well, it tastes terrible. No, I'm wrong. I lie. I tell a lie. Petrol is the French for paraffin.
He blows up with it.
Petroleur is the paraffin hour. Oh, he's an incendiarist.
Yes.
Using petrol or paraffin, I would have thought.
Yes.
He's exploding things.
Yes, he's an incendiarist, a fire bug.
Yes, that's better. You get a two mark. He's a chap who sets fire to things, buildings, prime ministers and so on, by using petroleum. Now, Dennis Powell, the meaning of the word digitigrade.
Digitigrade. Taking steps.
Yeah. A particular kind of step.
By digits.
Yes, the digits is the important thing.
Digits. Walking on your hands.
Not walking on your hands. You're getting very nervous.
Walking on your fingers.
Your feet. Walking on your fingers.
Walking on your hands.
Walking on your hands. This isn't walking on your hands. Walking on your fingers.
Walking on other people's hands.
One out of two. It means walking on the toes without placing the whole of the foot or the heel on the ground. And some animals do this. I think the great sloth does it.
Yes, it does. On his knuckles.
And some carnivores do it too. They never put the main part of the foot on the ground at all. They're always on tiptoe. Dennis Norton, I've got a much, much harder one for you. What is a bald money? B-A-L-D-M-O-N-E-Y. Bald money.
Bald money. Well, bald money is when a man dies without any family. When he leaves his money, it's called bald money, you see, because there's no heirs.
Oh, very good.
Have you been writing the riddles for Christmas crackers?
You can get away from
that. That's a thigh slapper, isn't it?
Get away from an affecting story and become a bit more botanical. It might help.
Bald money botanical. Oh, it's the name of a botanical thing.
a flower, such as a flower or plant or shrub or herb.
Yep. Bald money is a yellow-flowered, umbelliferous plant. And right back in the 16th century, it was a word used for the gentian, which doesn't go all that often in England, except in Teesdale. All right. Well, before we begin round two, I'm going to give each team a quotation for them to write down. And the two women members of the team will, I hope, go on studying those quotations, because at the end of the programme I shall ask them where those quotations come from. So, Anne Scott-James with Dennis Norden, here's yours. Just like the ivy, I'll cling to you. And Dillis Bowell and Frank Muir, your quotation is, the rank is but the guinea stamp. And then at the end of the programme I shall ask Dennis and Frank to give me their ideas of how these words came to be said or written. Next round is Shakespearean. I want to know of what or whom Shakespeare was referring to when he wrote the following lines. 2 marks and an extra mark, making 3, if you know which character actually spoke the lines. Beginning with Anne Scott-James, age cannot wither nor custom stale her infinite variety.
Well, it's of Cleopatra.
Yep. Said by?
I suppose Antony. Was that too easy?
No, this sort of chorus character in Antony.
Female?
No.
Not one of
those? Difficult.
Ina Barbus.
Yes, quite right. Frank Muir. He was a man, take him for all in all. I shall not look upon his like again.
Hamlet.
Yes, speaking of?
His dad.
Yes, 3 marks it is. Now, Dillis Bowell. How like a fawning publican he looks, I hate him.
Said by Shylock.
Yes, quite right.
There. Merchant of Venice.
Yes, it's Shylock. When Bassanio is about to introduce Shylock to Antonio, the Merchant of Venice, and he says, how like a fawning publican he looks, I hate him, for he is a Christian, but more, for that in low simplicity he lends out money gratis and brings down the rate of usance here with us in Venice. 3 marks. Dennis Norden. Away, you scullion, you rampallion, you fustilarian, I'll tickle your catastrophe.
Yes, that's a... It's a favourite crossword puzzle. I'll tickle your blank. It makes it even look worse. It's Falstaff.
Yes.
Says it.
About?
Mistress...
Yes.
Quickly.
Yes. In?
In Henry the Fourth.
Yes. All right, we won't bother about which
part. It was actually between part one and part two in the commercial.
Well done, Dennis. 3 marks. Yes, this was spoken to Mistress or Hostess Quickly by Falstaff in Henry the Fourth, part two. And she was very angry with him because she was trying to get him arrested for all the money he owed her on tick for the drinks that he'd had. And immediately afterwards, in comes the Lord Chief Justice, and she tries to get him committed to prison. 3 marks. Next round is the origins and derivations and present meanings of words and phrases. 3 marks if you can define the present meaning and then give me the origin and derivation of the following words. Anne Scott-James, your word is sabotage. Present meaning, derivation.
Well, it means to sort of stick a bomb under something.
Yeah.
That's will fine. That do?
Yes, it'll do.
Blow something up, which is going nicely and smoothly.
Yes. And originally?
Can't think what a sabo. I can only think of a sabo the shoe, but it can't come from that, can it?
That's a good start.
Is it?
Hmm?
Well, yeah. A sabo is a sort of clog.
Yes.
Ah, yes. In the 16th century, people used to, when they were sitting quietly on a stool, when a woman was, a man would come up and kick the stool from under her with his sabo. Hence the phrase.
It's a very pretty picture.
Saboteur and sabotage. Okay.
Not quite, but two, I think. Not three. As Anne Scott-James says, it's any act which is designed to destroy and render ineffective machinery or bridges, like the Luddites who tried to sabotage the Industrial Revolution, or metaphorically, stopping attempts to settle something peacefully, putting a spanner in the works. There are two possible origins. One is that some French workers at some time used these heavy wooden clogs to kick and damage machinery they didn't much like. The other explanation is that during the great French railway strike in 1912, the rail workers cut the sabots or shoes which held down the railway lines, therefore ensuring that the trains couldn't run. 2 out of 3. Frank Miller. Dicey. D-I-C-E-Y. Dicey.
Wartime expression meaning dangerous.
Yeah. And why?
Well, the full one was dicing with death, wasn't it?
And if a Battle of Britain pilot came back and said that's what he'd been doing, what had he been doing?
Well, he'd been doing, probably doing slow rolls at about 5 feet an hour.
I think that's good enough, Frank. 3 marks. Dicey means something risky and dangerous. It's originally RAF slang. Nowadays, it certainly applies to any kind of risky operation. I mean, dicing down M1 or something of that sort.
Yep.
3 marks. Dennis Powell. Sinister.
Sinister means having an appearance of being dangerous or disagreeable.
Yes. And originally?
Actually, it comes from something to do with the left hand.
And why?
Something to do with auguries.
Yes.
Auguries when a bird flew in from the left or something, it was a bad omen or something of the sort.
That'll do. Sinister nowadays means of ill omen or ill-looking or wicked or malign. But as Dennis Powell rightly says, it comes from the Latin word meaning left or left-handed. And the left side was regarded as being superstitiously dangerous and of ill omen. Illegitimate child was said to have born on the left side of the bed or the wrong side of the blanket. And a morganatic marriage where a noble married a commoner was a left-handed marriage and so on. It gets a bit complicated because this, in fact, comes from the Greek. And the Greeks, when taking omens, faced north. And the left hand was the west or setting sun side and was jolly unlucky. The Romans, God help them, faced the other way. And they often thought that sinister was jolly lucky, but they still were obsessed with the Greek. Dennis Norden, the word snob.
Well, it means somebody who places undue importance on social position or wealth or French films, depending upon the type of snob you are. Now,
and by origin?
Well, it was a North Country word for a cobbler's or a cobbler apprentice,
right.
Is it in Hobson's Choice?
Nowadays, somebody who apes the ways of those in a higher social position and puts an exaggerated estimate on rank and wealth and fashionable society and probably at the same time tries to conceal his own supposedly inferior origin. The explanations for this are a bit confused. Thackeray wrote a book of snobs, and it's supposed by some that he used the word first referring to George IV, who was known as the first gentleman of Europe, and without having all the qualities necessary, and that the snob first referred to him. But in universities, when you had a mixture, we've referred to this before, of noblemen and commoners, those who were not noblemen had after their name on the college list S. Nob, which means sine nobilitate, which means not of noble blood. But I think probably Dennis's is the best explanation, which is that a snob meant a cobbler, and in those days, therefore, a rather unskilled, silly, foolish fellow. So I think that's very unfair to cobblers. And Dennis, I think, earns his 3 marks. Well, then, a quickie round on abbreviations and initials. 2 marks to get them right. Beginning with Anne Scott James. R-A-D-C.
Well, R could well be royal.
Yes.
Royal something something core.
Yes. You wouldn't need the core if they were all false already.
Dental!
All right, 1.5. I helped you. Royal Army Dental Corps. Frank Muir, CIA.
CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Information Agency.
1.5 again.
From James Bond. The Central...
Central Intelligence Agency of the
United... Well, give or take a syllable.
of the United States of America, which used to be run by Alan Dulles, and now is run by a character whose name at the moment escapes me, and always fighting James Bond's smirch, wasn't it? CIA, Central Intelligence Agency. Dennis Powell, more peaceful. St. John...
What's the question?
We'll give you another. BRCS.
BRCS.
Oh, it's filthy. I wouldn't.
BRCS.
BRCS.
British. British?
Yes. Swiss flag backwards.
Swiss flag backwards?
Brown, red, crimson, scarlet.
British Red Cross Society.
Yes, you're dead right, but I helped you quite a lot, and I give you one and a half. All right, one and a half. BRCS, British Red Cross Society. The one that I gave away to you was SJAB, which was St. John's Ambulance Brigade.
I should never have got it.
Dennis Norden, ICBM.
Intercontinental Ballistic Missile.
Well done. Well, now we come to the last round. And so we go back to those two quotations I gave the teams earlier on in the programme. So that Anne Scott-James, for 2 marks, can you tell me where your quotation comes from? Just like the ivy, I'll cling to you.
I remember Leslie Henson singing a wonderful song called I Want to Cling to Ivy, if Ivy Will Cling to Me. And I think it was a skit on an older song.
Yeah.
Which could be this. Old song.
Do you remember the first line of this?
Oh, I didn't know you were going to ask me that. All this studying
just
of
like
my quotation
the
I've been supposed
on
to
the
doing.
Old garden wall.
That's it.
Clinging so tightly. There may be fall.
That's all right.
And that's lovely. What do you mean it's all right?
I'll make you the force's sweetheart, if you like, Dennis. I don't mind.
Sweetheart of the spent forces.
One and a half, I think, out of two. Just like the ivy arcing to you, comes from a song written by A.J. Mills, and as Dennis quite rightly sang, just like the ivy on the old garden wall, clinging so tightly, whate'er may befall. Now, Didis Powell, the origin of your quotation, the rank is but the guinea stamp.
Robert Burns.
Mm-hmm. Poem called?
Well, it goes on about a man's a man for all that.
And it goes on for a frightful long time.
Yes,
that.
On yes. And on.
Yes. That. All right, 2 marks it is.
Dirt on Caledonian night. That.
Robert Burns, the poem called For Ah That and Ah That. The rank is but the guinea stamp. The man's the gold for ah that.
You'll get dirt, too. Accent.
Well, now I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their explanations of how these quotations came into being, and the marks will go to whichever unlikely explanation gets the longer amount of applause from the audience here in the studio. And so back to Dennis Norden and his quotation, just like the ivy, I'll cling to you.
Well, the ladies and gentlemen here in the studio audience may find it difficult to believe, but when I was young, I was absolutely startlingly handsome. So incredibly good-looking that there was only one career possible for me, and that was to be a matinee idol. Now, you seem to find that difficult to believe, but I must impress upon you, that was before my accident. I had a nasty accident. I fell off Sir Lawrence Olivia from a height of 60 feet. I better go back to the beginning. You see, being, as I say, so beautiful, and it's the only word for it, I decided the only career was to be an actor, and I went to along to the Old Vic, and I saw the manager, and he took one look at me and said, by heaven, you're handsome. And I said, steady. I said, I've come along to give you an opportunity of employing me. And he said, well, good looks aren't quite enough equipment for an actor. He said, I know exactly what we'll do with you. He wasn't explicit about it, but he led me outside and pointed to the front of the Old Vic, and he said, one day you will be up there in lights. And I said, when? And he said, this afternoon. And he offered me this job of changing the signs which tell what the program is at the Old Vic, which I took, and he called, Chas, and out came this elderly electrician who was called Charlie when he worked at the windmill, but Chas when he entered the intellectual environs of the old Vic. He said, Chas, this is your new assistant, Dennis Norden, a would-be actor. And Chas said, how do you do? He said, I never met anybody from would-be. It's in Leicester. Well, I forgave him this because I thought how embarrassed he'd be when I was an international star and he was still looking for a pair of insulated pliers. And I said, what have we got to do? And he said, we've got to change the sign. Come with me. And he took me down to this basement where there were hundreds of enormous cut-out letters with bulbs in them. Electric light bulbs, not tulips. And he said, we pick out the letters for the programme for tonight. So I said, well, what is the programme tonight? He said, I'll give you a clue. And with one hand, he picked out the letter I, and the other, he picked out the letter V. And he said, you know what it is? And I hazarded a wild guess, worm's eye view. And he said, no, it's King Henry IV. From which you remember the famous line, I tickle your catastrophe. He said, we got tonight Sir Laurence Olivier in Henry IV. We've got to put it up on the sign. Come with me. So there I was, not very much later. He had landed me the putting up of the words Sir Laurence Olivier in, while he put up Henry IV, which was a rather unequal division of labour. But as I was new, I was landed with it. And of course, it's this big, enormous iron frame into which the letters fit, and it's 60 foot high. And he said, be very careful. He said, don't lean on it at all. He said, because there's only two wing nuts holding it. He said, that's why we need a national theatre, more wing nuts. I said, right. And I got up as far as S-I-R for Sir, L-A-U for the start of Lawrence, and I looked down, and he'd finished his bit, and I must have been daydreaming because I thought of the moment when my name would be up there. Dennis Norden, Sir Dennis Norden, in Hamlet, and suddenly I heard this shriek from below, look out, it's giving way. And there was this rending sound, and the whole of the iron frame came away from the wall, and looking down, I saw Chas there. He was clinging on with one hand to the letter I, and with the other hand to the letter V. So I spread-eagled myself across the U, and as the whole thing descended to the ground, and my face was reduced to the shapeless mediocrity that it is now. My chance of becoming an international star were reduced to nothing. This wholly irrelevant thought flashed into my mind as I looked down at him. Chas liked the IV. I'll cling to you.
And now we go on to the second quotation for Frank Muir. The rank is but the guinea's stamp.
Once, about a couple of years ago, I was taken to see, to the Earl's Court Rink, I think it was, to see the Desert Song on Ice. Now, this impressed me for the sheer incongruity of the thing. The Desert Song on Ice. You know, it just didn't fit at all. But I realised, say you put the Desert Song on sand, you'd have a new honesty in drama, a kind of still core of honesty, which would be a real breakthrough. I tried this, actually, during the summer. We were at Frinton-on-Sea. I got some friends to rehearse. It didn't work, actually. Through no fault of my own, I couldn't hire a cinema. I hadn't the capital, and the tide came in. You can't really sing the riff song, Rolling Up Your Trousers, with the left hand, and the salt water got into the harmonium bellows. You do need music, you know. And I abandoned it. Then I thought of My Fair Lady. You know, My Fair Lady, marvellous English life, dramatised from the Irish playwright. But played on wooden boards is wrong. So I thought, how about playing My Fair Lady on nourishing stout? Freeze a whole lot of stout and let them skate around and play, and you get real integrity in the drama. So I found just the place, at the back of a brewery, that make this stout. There was a huge 4-acre dump
full of old stout bottles. I found by emptying out all these bottles, I could stack them and make sort of seats. And I poured all the stout into the middle, where it formed a kind of lake. And I laid copper piping among that and put a sort of refrigerator. It wasn't really a refrigeration plant. It was a heat exchanger, you know, a system where you get a thing cold by hot heating up something else, you know, rather like a wife's feet in bed. And I fixed one of these things on, and I froze all this stout and made this shiny rink. And I thought, if people, they sit on these broken bottles, and I got Albert Finney to play, not the Albert Finney, the butcher's lad at home. He's kind of a helpful coincidence and looks well on the programme. And I got him to play Professor Higgins, and I rehearsed the company, and the sets were designed by Cecil Beaton. He didn't know, but I copied them from a book of his designs. But they were designed by Cecil Beaton. And I suddenly realised it is hopeless going on with this project. I'm undercapitalized. And I realize it's absolutely no good, you see. I must have the money. Because even though I've got the costumes and the performance and the skating, the rink is but the Guinness dump.
Well, a result in which there is a draw in the two stories, and it finally arrives at a result in which there is a draw in the complete program. And that brings us to an end of this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dilys Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The programme was devised by Tony Schreien and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.